Off the Ball. GAA.
It all depends on fitness, and it's a lot with the club, you know. Brian Stack is like the master key. He can do a lot of jobs there. And if he's out, you know, there's a lot of fires to put out as well.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Daily.
Good evening, you're welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Coming up, we're going to be talking about Brooks Koepka and his return to the PGA Tour from 7:30. Alan Shipnuck is going to join us on the line to talk about the player return program, what this means for Koepka, what this means for the tour, what this means for the former PGA Tour players who've won majors, who are now playing in LIV over the course of the next month. They've been essentially given a deadline until the start of February to come back or forever keep your place in LIV golf. So it's going to be a very interesting few weeks building into Torrey Pines at the end of this month, and what happens in the world of golf at the moment in terms of their power struggle. From 8 o'clock then, Jerome Westbrooks is going to join us in studio for an interview. So in 1981, Jerome Westbrooks is a player who's come out of college in Illinois. He's playing D3 basketball over there. Very, very good player, but he's kind of settled down and has decided that his life is going to be working a quote-unquote normal job in Chicago for the rest of his life until he gets scouted by a Dublin man and gets brought over to Colchester to subsequently go on to have 4 decades of an amazing Irish sports career. He is being inducted into the Basketball Ireland Hall of Fame this May. There is, of course, the National Cup Finals this weekend, and he's going to join us in studio tonight. So really looking forward to catching up with him. From 9 o'clock then, we've got a brilliant football show coming your way. Carl Anka is going to join us on the line to talk about Manchester United, to set the scene as well for tomorrow's Africa Cup of Nations semi-finals, which are two brilliant clashes. And then Graham Hunter is going to round things off by talking about the situation at Real Madrid and what is next for Xabi Alonso. Our number is 087-9180-180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message this evening. Cameron Hill is here. Hello, Cameron.
Hello, and how are you?
Very well. And Michael McCarthy is also here. Hello.
Hi,
Mick.
Guys.
We were on the radio last night watching Dominic Szoboszlai ruin football, it turns out. He has just gone way too far. He attempted a back heel and he has destroyed football.
You're saying that there's been a bit of an overreaction today, Owen. Is that the tone I should take?
Is it a football-only thing? Is it a societal thing? Is it sport in general? But are we just in the habit of completely losing our minds over very small things at the moment?
It's so funny you said that, because I was thinking on the drive in today, I was listening to a podcast, it was a conversation about something completely different, but it just made me think about how obsessed that we get with like minute decisions in football. Like, and these are refereeing decisions and so on, or the idea that the game, that offside is something that was designed to stop attacking teams getting an unfair advantage, and the idea was for a linesman to look at it from 30 yards away if and whatever he says is the answer. And now we have changed it into a rule where, you know, we stop the game for 5 minutes to see whether somebody's toe is over a line, an imaginary line, or not. And if it is, then there's no goal, because it's a binary thing and it's either on or it's off. But it's like, that's not what it's for. It's for to see so the forwards can play in front of the defence. That's literally all it is. So why are we doing this? And we get so worked up about it. And before there was VAR, we were getting just as worked up about it, because it was conspiracies and it was everything else. We're all crazy. And I'm as bad as anyone.
It's amazing how I've gone from Szoboszlai to VAR and then one very quick turn of the corner.
But I was trying to not make it about a VAR thing.
No,
even our obsession with offside in general is so bizarre.
Like, for the record, I think when you're Conor Hourihan coming out afterwards as Barnsley manager and you're saying that you feel disrespected by what Dominic Szoboszlai did, you have every right in the world to feel that way. You're coming up against them, you're a lower opposition on the football pyramid compared to Liverpool, and I can see your point of view. Like, but I think what Dominic Szoboszlai does last night is a little bit of complacency, and that is forgivable. He was complacent in a moment. He looked at opposition that aren't as good as the teams he plays in Premier League, and he just got it wrong.
But why is our natural imposition to be angry about it? It was hilarious. It was really funny.
There is that. I guess you could be angry if you're a Liverpool fan, and in that moment you think that he's let an underdog back into the game, and that's it. That's fair enough.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah, but I'm talking about the football is ruined. The game's gone, people.
Yeah, and that Szoboszlai should be dropped.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's okay to do things that when you look back on the tape of the game afterwards, you regret. Much like the Martinelli thing last week. People get things wrong in the moment. I'm not saying what Szoboszlai did is the same as Martinelli, but the moral panic about a human being making an error of judgment in a live situation.
And also, he just made a physical balls of the technique that he was trying to do. Goalkeepers, like, we see that like once or twice a week of somebody taking what would seem an unbelievable risk in the box, but it's totally fine because they almost always get away with it because it's unexpected.
Is part of it the kind of culture that's emerged over the last maybe 15 years in football of like spite being the big motivating factor in anything anyone ever does? Like, is the idea that Dominic Szoboszlai did that because he's playing against Barnsley because he doesn't rate them? Like, that seems to be how that narrative is put across. In the same way that, like, if you watch crowd reactions to goals, the instinctive thing for supporters to do is cheer at the opposition after they've scored a goal. It's like, yeah, get that up, you. Like, it's almost like, haha, not a celebration of our attempt. It's just that life has gotten much worse for you suddenly, and that's a great thing to celebrate.
I've told you all about this, I'm sure. I don't know if I talked about it on air, but one of the best matches I was ever at, I went to Villa to see Villa in the Championship, and they were playing against Sheffield United, and they were on a bad run of form, and they were 3-0 down after 80 minutes, and miraculously drew 3-3, and it was just this amazing night, like, you know. And I was walking out of the ground, like, totally on cloud nine about seeing this kind of like magical few minutes of football, and all the Villa fans are shouting at like 3-0 and you effed it up, and I'm like, why are they worried about Sheffield? They're not even a rival. Like, why is your first thought to be about the opposition fans? And that, look, people will listen to that and go, like, that's what football is. You know what I mean? And that's the fun of it, and that's fine. I understand it. I just remember thinking, I couldn't give a rat's ass about them.
There might have been a moment at some point in those fans' history where Sheffield United did something bad to them, and it's just this vicious cycle. Yeah. I don't know who was the first person to raise the
pitch a couple of times over the course of that game and get into fights with police and things like
okay,
that.
Okay, well, that'll do it.
But I don't know if that was... I kind of feel like that happens every game.
Yeah. You let that fester.
It's like, just the constant pursuit of having the last laugh. Finally, we've got one back on you who did something terrible to us. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was a terrible thing, and finally we've had the last laugh.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somebody's been in touch to say, with Carrick in charge for 17 games, what chance have Manchester United of getting 25 points? I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know that it's Cameron Hill's top story. Michael Carrick and his backroom team have been confirmed.
A verbal agreement has been reached.
Okay.
So Michael Carrick and Manchester United agreeing in principle for him to take over as the club's interim head coach. We're expecting a confirmation from Old Trafford later this evening. This feels incredibly drawn out. Former England and Chelsea assistant manager Steve Holland will be his number two. Jonathan Woodgate and Johnny Evans will be joining his backroom team. He's due to take over until the end of the season following Ruben Amorim's sacking last week, of course. So his first game in charge will be at home in Saturday's Manchester Derby.
Sean has texted in to say VAR was introduced because players and managers lie and cheat at every opportunity to gain an advantage in what is a multi-million pound industry. Blame them.
Yeah. I'm not blaming anybody, but fine.
Dropping truth bombs
there,
Sean.
Doesn't mean it's the way to go.
VAR brought in to spite everyone.
Sounds like a very kind of defence of, like, you know, don't you attack the game's administrators. They're doing their best. It's those millionaire footballers that are the problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably why Szoboszlai did what he did last night. There was no VAR, nothing to hold these liars and cheaters to account in the FA Cup. Is there an FA Cup in the EFL Cup? Or is there VAR in the FA Cup in the EFL Cup?
Yeah, there is. I think there's VAR in the latter stages of both competitions. It's just that you can't do it when you're in like Macclesfield and things like that. So in the early stages. The one thing I would say from, you know, again, going back to Szoboszlai, you said a minute ago, that, you know, our instinct is to go for the negative and all that. I do wonder if that's a little bit because we see these stories through social media. Like, nobody that I spoke to off social media about the Szoboszlai thing was in any way angry about it and found it anything other than hilarious. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, I suppose the Conor Hourihan thing, in fairness, does get some oxygen into it. But he's coming from a biased point of view where you've got to fight tooth and nail for your team, and you're like, died in the wool Barnsley man at this point because you're their manager. So I can see that point of view. But yeah, you're right. I think social media probably dictates a little bit too much. One quick scroll and your mind has been completely washed. You are going to the EFL Cup next because we do have the first leg of the first semi-final.
Yeah, holders Newcastle taking on Manchester City in that first leg of that last four encounter at St James's Park tonight, Owen. And City boss Pep Guardiola believes that winning the EFL Cup can boost their chances of further success this season.
I would say not as a routine, but it's like, okay, we have done it, you know? So when a player said, if I've done it, I can do it again.
For Newcastle manager Eddie Howe, it's a pretty straightforward message to his charges ahead of tonight's game.
Our view in the first game is we want to try and win. We want to try and win the game independently without thinking too far ahead. I don't think that's wise to do. And then the second leg will take care of itself.
Team news is in from St James's Park. 7 changes for Newcastle tonight. So Nick Pope, Lewis Miley, Lewis Hall, Bruno Guimaraes, Joe Linton, Jacob Murphy and Anthony Gordon all coming back into the side. For City then, it's 5 changes from that 10-1 win over Exeter City with Phil Foden, Mateus Nunez, Bernardo Silva, Nico O'Reilly and Jeremy Doku back into the team from the start.
Yeah, Antoine Semenyo continuing to play for Manchester City this weekend as well. Or tonight, I should say. So fully locked and loaded by and large for both of these teams, you'd have to say. Like Donnarumma not playing, James Trafford getting the opportunity maybe is notable. Cherki not playing, Rodri obviously on the bench tonight as well, managing his minutes, Pep Guardiola. But a fairly strong, I think 80% is what we're talking with regards to the players on the pitch this evening. Now on to Gavin Bazunu.
He's agreed a loan move to Stoke City for the remainder of the season. The Irish goalkeeper made 19 appearances for Championship side Southampton in the first half of this campaign. While here at home, Rob Cornwall has signed for Dundalk ahead of the new League of Ireland Premier Division season. He'll join his former Bows teammate Keith Buckley at the newly promoted Lee Whites.
It's a big move for Bazunu. Like, his career has stalled and obviously there's been a big injury there. But he's been playing for Southampton this season. He made a miraculous save against Millwall a couple of weeks ago and like kept them in the game. But generally, when you search his name with Southampton fans, just not really happy with him, you know. And I thought there was a sense in the Premier League that like they weren't really understanding what it was he was good at, I suppose, you know. But I think they've probably seen enough of him now that we should trust the fans of the team. But he's actually going, you know, up the table here a little bit. If he plays, this is a big move. If he has a good, you know, second half of the season, playing every week for Stoke, you know, that's a rebirth of his career that I think we would, you know, it's all very well to say, oh, we've got Caoimhín Kelleher now, so we no longer care about a young Irish guy with a big career ahead of him in England.
Yeah, and Stoke City in the hunt for playoff at the moment. They're in 8th position on 40 points, Watford in 6th on 41 points. The race for those, you know, next 4 spots after the top 2 tends to be one of the best storylines in English football. So Stoke City are going to be part of that story between now and May, that's for sure. Where are you going next, Cameron?
We'll move to Gaelic Game Zone because ex-Antrim hurler Neil McManus has hinted that a positive update on the redevelopment of Casement Park will be given later this week. The works on the Belfast venue have suffered significant delays and setbacks for more than a decade. But the Northern Ireland executive announced additional funding for the project last week. And speaking to our own Rachel Sheehan today, McManus is optimistic on the prospects for the ground in 2026.
Truly hopeful we're going to get good news on that this week, because it's almost become a rights issue for people in the north to have a functioning Casement Park to represent the needs and to give us the opportunity to show our young people there is a route to playing in front of big crowds, there is a route to being a big star for your community, and for West Belfast it will be a massive economic boost as well.
Yeah, for sure. Neil McManus and Conor McManus getting the Lake Regale treatment.
The McManus season.
Yeah, the Conor McManus one in particular is going to be essential viewing, I'd imagine. He is the first one of the season that's coming out.
Looking forward to it. I still enjoy the Lake Regales.
They're amazing.
You know, they have it. It's funny that after all these years, they've still kind of got the touch. You know, I like that they haven't tried to reinvent it too much. You know, it could be easy to say, "Ah, oh, we've made this 1,000 times."
Yeah,
let's update it and get fresh and do new graphics or something. No, just keep it the same system. That's what's worked the entire way through. And you look forward to every new season.
Frank's been in touch to say agree regarding offside. I know that VAR is binary, but as was stated, the concept of offside was to avoid scenarios of a forward getting a jump on a defender. However, by a factor of a toenail or a hair, that is ridiculous. They'll have to review it. And somebody is very cynical in the comments. Semenyo will be the new Grealish. A waste of talent at City. Talent needs to spread out amongst teams. NFL draft style. So not necessarily harsh on Semenyo, harsh of the system at Manchester City that's going to suck the individual brilliance out of Antoine Semenyo.
And harsh on City being able to buy them. I don't know. Like, I mean, maybe if everybody didn't protest the Super League and you just go off and maybe we just have football only being 20 teams in all of Europe, they can create, you know, a draft system and, you know, wage. What's the word I'm looking for? Salary cap. There we go. You know, and then football will be perfect. And none of the teams that anybody likes will be playing.
And somebody else agreeing with you. Agree with Mick. It was so funny seeing Szoboszlai make such a cock-up. Plus it was the reporter who used the word disrespectful and not Conor Hourihan, who never actually used it, but the word disappointed. Quote from Conor Hourihan, it was a little bit disrespectful from their player, to be honest. But I agree, the reporter did say it first. So maybe the reporter gave him permission to use the word disrespect.
Enabling the witness.
Yeah. I'm happy to give Conor Hourihan an out in this. You know, like, I mean, as I say, his bias is well and truly declared in this conversation. All in the Game on YouTube says, it blows my mind that VAR and goal line checks were brought into football before the incredibly simple stop the clock for any stoppage that's been in place in any other major team sport for decades. It's amazing how exercised people still get about VAR and the offside rule and these conversations, isn't it? Like, I've kind of been long strung out in this for a number of years, really, at this point. But it still is a topic that
I find sitting here in the studio, like a couple of days out from any games or anything like that, like it does seem mad. But watching the matches, it absolutely preoccupies my thoughts. You know, I can't stand it. I just feel like even just some of the FA Cup stuff, like just watching the games live, and it's like flag goes up, the whistle goes, that we don't have to watch this absolute like nothingness of the next 30 seconds to wait and see there's a goal happen, and then the whistle goes, and everything was just nicer. It just was. And it didn't feel as big a deal. You didn't care then whether they went to the, you know, once the offside was given, you didn't actually have to wait and see, you know, what the replay showed. It's like, which always confirms the right decision. The amount of bad decisions are very minuscule. Like, there isn't even that many of them, really. Like,
good. Is it
no because, VAR? Get rid of it.
Is it because PGMOL aren't brazen that it's not like they always come out and it's the whole if you're explaining you're losing thing?
But the other thing is,
it feels like a battle that can be won. The VAR debate,
possibly. Yeah, I know what you mean. I think another thing though is if you watched the FA Cup last weekend, the referees were way better because the reason there's so many bad decisions at the moment is because the referees are afraid to make a decision, especially for penalties, right? Because they think they could get it wrong and VAR will correct them. But VAR won't correct them because there's this referee's call thing and they don't want to, you know, upset their mate or undermine them. So loads of bad decisions are being made on penalties. Whereas when the referee is just making his decision at the weekend, 9 times out of 10 it was good.
Yeah, no, it was joyful knowing that like Brighton had gone 1-0 up at Old Trafford and knowing that there's going to be no U-turn on this.
Yeah.
It was pretty pure. Let's move on to rugby. The news regarding Ireland's props gets worse, Cameron.
Yeah, Ireland head coach Andy Farrell could be without another front row option for their Six Nations opener away to France in a month's time. So Leinster revealed yesterday that Andrew Porter and Paddy McCarthy are set for spells on the sidelines with calf and foot injuries respectively. And Connacht have today confirmed that Finlay Beelan will remain out for a few weeks after picking up a knee injury against Leinster in the URC earlier this month. Now, former Munster and Ireland hooker Mike Sherry joined Jarrod Cullum on Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, and he feels that there's a real scarcity of experience options for Farrell ahead of that showdown with the defending champions in Paris.
Munster are having big issues with their scrum at the minute. They've signed in Alatoa to cover a gap, which shows they're probably not where they need to be in terms of producing their own players and their own injury profile. That brings into stark focus Jaeger and what might have been, could have been. I hope he might be on the road to recovery, but he's someone that maybe has flown under the radar in the last couple of months because of his injury profile. But seeing the guy in action, seeing how big a human being he is, getting him in there, you know, he would have been a real asset, but at the minute he's just not fit enough. I think Connacht, decent scrum, but you know, they have their own issues, and Ulster kind of a younger group that are developing. I think a lot is reliant on Leinster, as a lot of these conversations do tend to fall back on, and they do have a few injuries. That's worrying people.
Is this one of these situations that it's so obvious that Ireland are going to get hammered in the first game that they actually don't get hammered and they actually go close to a famous win in France?
Ooh. Hope so. That would be good. That
that's the plan. Yeah. That's filled me with a lot more optimism than I would have had coming in here. Oh, I don't know. I think the fact that a lot of France's players that we might have thought might be out are actually probably going to be okay. The likes of Aluku and Jean-Baptiste Gros was playing against Munster for too long, and that might have swung things slightly towards Ireland again on the front row battle. But oh,
do you know what though, Cameron, is it not like a little bit disrespectful to Ireland? And like, I sound weird, feel weird even saying that, but is it not a bit disrespectful to this team to assume they're going to get hammered in any game? You know, like, even look at the South Africa game where like everything that could have possibly went wrong, you know, in terms of performance and being outgunned did, and yet
They were right,
you know, with 5 minutes to go, Ireland were on, you know, the try line to, you know, still in the game. Like, I just think that, I think surely they've done enough at this stage to suggest that they're not like a pushover for anybody.
I think the La Rochelle game was a real positive from an Irish perspective, because it feels like what they tried to do against South Africa actually came off, you know, bring the aggression to a team that they have, you know, a bit of history with, and definitely a rivalry, a heated rivalry against that. Like, you could see it, for once it wasn't James Ryan who got the yellow card against the side when he's going properly all guns blazing against a Will Skelton and Lavani Bhatia. Those types of players bring something out of that Ireland contingent, and I was very encouraged by it, because so many times it felt like during the South Africa game that Ireland really tried to bring it to them, and South Africa went, oh yeah, okay, big bad Ireland, is it, and just kind of swatted it away fairly easily, whereas La Rochelle couldn't. They managed to stay in the game, and then, as you say, being able to stay in the game means that you have the chance to win it towards the end. I wouldn't see it as a, I know Andy Dunn was talking about the defence and the rush defence and the various problems that Leinster have had this season, but just being able to be that close that it could come down to a hair's breadth, I think is a great thing.
France are 7-point favourites for the game, yeah, at the moment. So
7 points.
Yeah, that's not suggesting a hammering. Yeah.
It's interesting just listening to that clip there about, like, you know, relying on Leinster, and I completely understand where it's coming from. But, like, I do wonder if we do, you know, should we be looking at, like, even the injection of some fresh blood just giving a little bit of kind of a bit of excitement to the camp? You know what I mean? In a Six Nations as opposed to in November, it's like you bring in someone like a Zach Ward or something, and there's a few surprises in the team sheet that week, you know, that isn't really hinted at. And suddenly on Wednesday, we're hearing the, you know, the Jerry, I'm only guessing the team here article. And it's like, what? Can't believe that. I think, you know, something like that. I wonder, does the camp need a little bit of that? It's been a lot of the same players for a long, long time now.
Well, particularly when, you know, like...
But also, there's other players in other provinces that, grand, they, all together, they might not be that good, but they're all professional rugby players. And, you know, some of them are in form. Mm. And that has to matter too, you know what I mean? Like, all these Leinster players are playing together constantly. I think having a bit more of a mix in your team for the first time in a long time might be something worth even looking at.
Well, especially when the argument around the November squad was, ugh, same old, like a load of players we've already seen, no real injection of new faces, and the kind of counter argument was, well, who would you put in? Now Andy Farrell probably doesn't have a choice but to put in a couple of the less experienced, the likes of Jerry Cahir, probably Tom Clarks and Andrew Sparrow, they'll all get in. And I think if you're looking at that as a negative, oh God, we're going to lose every game that matters and we might even lose to Scotland, like this is a really bad omen. I think, you know, sometimes necessity being the mother of invention, yeah, is great for those players. And yeah, as you say, might have a bit of, might inject a fresh face and an injection and an energy, and also test a lot of those senior players to bring a couple of these guys in and integrate them fairly quickly, because that's what's going to be needed.
I think it's one of those things where we always have this argument where, oh, in Ireland we don't throw away a Six Nations because we're blooding for the World Cup, we can't do that, and we don't. And I'm always on that side. I don't like the idea of just like planning, you know, this thing for every match is about a game that's happening in 4 years' time or 2 years' time or whatever.
Next year.
Okay. End of next year.
It's two seasons away.
But like at the same time, if that's the way forward, if that's the best option for this year's Six Nations, isn't that also a great benefit for the people who want us to be constantly blooding for the next World Cup? You know, and I think it might be the best way forward for this year's Six Nations.
Yeah. Well, as Cameron says, it's probably going to be by necessity in some positions,
yeah,
over the course of the first few weeks.
But hopefully it's also by form, though, as well. You know, like, let's not be playing lads because they have 80 caps if they're not doing enough at the moment, you know?
Yeah. You are continuing with the rugby, Cameron?
Yeah, we'll finish with injury update from across the provinces. So as well as the Finlay Beelam News, Connacht have said that Hugh Gavin will be out for a number of months after undergoing surgery on his shoulder. Shane Bolton out until April with a quad problem. Jack Carty and Dave Heffernan among the players back available for selection ahead of Saturday's Challenge Cup clash with Montauban in Galway. Then on the Munster front, mixed news. So winger Calvin Nash out with a head and shoulder injury, while Paddy Patterson has also been ruled out with a head knock. Craig Casey could still be available despite suffering a shoulder injury in the defeat to Toulon, but the province say that the Ireland scrum half, and Diarmaid Barron will be further assessed later in the week, while Jean Clain and Ollie Yeager are both fit and available. Just staying on Clain, Munster have confirmed that he will leave the province at the end of the season to join English side Gloucester. He made 160 appearances and scored 15 tries for the province and earned 5 caps for Ireland before switching allegiance to his home country, South Africa.
Do you want to pay tribute to Jean Clain, Mick?
In a great 10 years.
Yeah.
There was that time when he was Irish, and then there was the time after that when he was South African again.
Well, I think the most important part about his identity is Tighthead Lock. Tighthead Lock became a really big part of the 2019 World Cup discourse.
The scrummaging lock, yeah. I feel like he's had a very good career. I think there was more of an appreciation for Clain maybe last year, in obviously what he did with South Africa when he went back there, and you see kind of the level he's at. And then obviously when Snyman moved to Leinster, there was very much it's okay, like we are keeping a very, very good South African second row here as well.
Not over yet.
Absolutely. That's what I was going to say. A lot of this season to go.
Cameron Hill, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Mike McCarthy, thanks for popping in as well. We're going to be catching up with Alan Shipnuck to talk about Brooks Koepka and his return to the PGA Tour after the break.
Off the Ball Daily.